Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Carrie Antholis, filling in for Chris Tarracone. Season 8 of Jury Duty explores the trial of Alex Murdaugh, a member of one of the most powerful families in South Carolina, who was accused of murdering his son, Paul, and his wife, Maggie, with the purpose of covering up a multitude of alleged crimes, including fraud and homicide. In our last episode, we concluded our presentation of the direct examination of Alex Murdaugh's former paralegal, Annette Griswold. In this installment, we recap the testimony of Forge Consulting principal Michael Gunn, and we review the testimonies of digital evidence examiner Brian Hudak and FBI electronics engineer Dwight Falkowski. That's all coming up right after the break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It is the late morning of February 8th, 2023, day 11 of the trial of Alex Murdaugh. After Annette Griswold leaves the stand, prosecutor Johnny James calls Michael Gunn as the state's next witness. We covered Mr. Gunn's testimony for Judge Clifton Newman's in-camera hearing in episode 55 of this podcast season, so we will briefly recap the familiar aspects of his testimony under direct examination so as to avoid redundancy. Mr. Gunn is in his 40s and sports a graying goatee and dark hair parted neatly on his right side. He wears a navy blue suit, a black patterned tie, and a sky blue dress shirt. Gunn is a principal of Forge Consulting, a company that worked with the defendant's former firm, PMPED, to structure legal settlements. Alex Murdaugh named a private bank account after Forge Consulting. This account is generally referenced in court as the fake Forge, which Murdaugh created in order to steal client fees and to suggest to anyone examining the deposits that they were sent to the firm trust accounts at the real Forge Consulting firm where Gunn works. Mr. Gunn testifies that he had a professional connection to Murdaugh, which eventually turned into friendship. He and the defendant discussed using Forge accounts to facilitate legal contingent fee deferral arrangements, but had no direct conversations about using those accounts for specific case fees. In 2021, Gunn received inquiries about Forge Consulting's banking practices. This led to the discovery that Murdaugh had been using a fraudulent account with the Forge name. Gunn affirms that he had no prior knowledge of the fake Forge account. After Johnny James concludes his direct examination of Mr. Gunn, defense attorney Jim Griffin rises to begin his cross-examination of the witness.
Good afternoon.
You had some formal positions with the South Carolina Association of Justice?
Yes, sir.
What were those?
Did some government affairs, lobbying work for them.
Okay, and you on a contract basis?
As an employee and as a contract.
Okay. And at one point in time, Alex Murdaugh was the president of the South Carolina SCAJ?
Yes, sir, he was.
And were you employed at the time or contract lobbied?
Yes, sir, I was employed at the time, yes, sir.
And part of his duties, well, I guess he was on the board for a period of time as well, right?
That's correct, yes, sir.
And the SCAJ board and the president would meet in Columbia quarterly, monthly, how often?
They would meet in Columbia probably twice a year. They normally met at the convention spots or the CLE spots, and then one was always by telephone. But usually the president was, even the telephone call, the president would come to Columbia.
And when he would come to Columbia, you remember Maggie would come with him and spend the night on those business trips?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. I don't know if it was specifically for that for the SCAGE stuff, but I do remember Maggie spending the night in Columbia. Yes.
But you saw them traveling together in Columbia. I mean, you said you would see him in Columbia on business reasons. Was the business reasons his membership on the board and then?
I would say, generally speaking, most of the time when I would see him, it would be because of that, yes, sir.
And then he and Maggie came to you and your wife's wedding in New York, right?
They did.
And my understanding is the big day came on the day of a big blizzard.
3 feet of snow, yes, sir.
And so you had to delay the wedding a day, right?
We did.
And you got to spend a lot more time with Maggie and Alec.
And all the other guests, yes, sir.
Right. And at that point in time, your wife became friends with Maggie, and y'all became pretty good social friends?
I think so. I mean, we still didn't really hang out much after the wedding other than professional settings, and that could have been just because of the distance between the towns. But, yeah, we keep in touch, no doubt.
And then every year, I think you mentioned, there's an annual convention at Hilton Head of the, we used to call it trial lawyers. But
I still do, too.
Yeah, of the trial lawyers, right?
Yes, sir.
And that's usually at a hotel. It used to be at the Westin at Port Royal, I think.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
I think maybe they moved it. I don't know.
Marriott now.
Yeah, so. And there, there would be seminars, you know, during the day, and then they'd be socializing in the evenings.
Yes, sir.
And it was a family event.
Very much so.
And Alec would bring Maggie and Paul and Buster.
Every time.
And you got to see him interact with his entire family.
I did.
And he was a family man, wasn't he?
By all accounts, yes, sir.
And you went to Maggie and Paul's funeral?
Yes, sir, I did.
And then after the funeral, you went out to Moselle?
Yes, sir.
And what was Alec's demeanor?
He was a broken man. You could tell. He was very upset. He was very upset.
And then you saw him a few months later at that convention at Hilton Head?
Yes, sir, I did.
And you said he was with his brother, John Marvin?
Yes, sir.
And his son Buster was there, too.
I believe that's correct, yes, sir.
Now, John Marvin's not a lawyer, right?
He's not.
Is it unusual for John Marvin to come to the lawyer convention?
I had not seen him before, no, at the convention, no.
Right. He was there supporting his brother?
I believe so, yes.
And people were trying to lift Alec's spirits up and support him during that period of time.
I think so, yes, sir.
I don't have anything further. Nothing further from the state.
Thank you, sir.
With that, Michael Gunn concludes his testimony.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
After Michael Gunn steps down from the witness stand and Brian Hudak takes the seat, Prosecutor John Conrad begins to question the witness when Judge Clifton Newman suddenly interrupts and announces that an unrevealed issue has prompted courthouse security to evacuate the building. Once the security matter is resolved, Judge Newman calls the lunch break. After the lunch break, Brian Hudak again steps up to the witness stand. Mr. Hudak appears to be in his 40s. He is clean-shaven and sports short black hair. He wears a gray suit, a white dress shirt, and a purple patterned tie. Prosecutor John Conrad handles the questioning for the state.
I think you're explaining your duties. Let's just start there again.
Sure.
What are your duties at SLED, sir?
In computer crimes, I'm responsible for examining digital evidence, be it cell phones, computers, vehicle infotainment systems. I also respond to network intrusion incidents, and I'm the evidence custodian.
Okay. And in the course of your duties at SLED, did you have occasion to come into contact with a 2021 Chevrolet Suburban that was driven by the defendant on the night of the murders?
Yes, I did.
What was your role with that vehicle? What did you do with that vehicle?
I was contacted about potentially removing the infotainment system for examination. However, it was unsupported by the tool I use. So I was asked to still remove said infotainment and OnStar systems to be sent off for further examination.
I'm going to show you what's been marked as State's Exhibit 444. Do you recognize that document, sir?
Yes, that's a SLED property receipt that I filled out with the information for the infotainment module and the OnStar module.
Is that the document you filled out when you removed that infotainment center?
Yes, it is.
And what else did you remove?
Infotainment module and an OnStar module.
And you just testified that SLED did not have any tools that gave you the ability to actually analyze those items. Is that correct?
Correct. The software I have access to, which as far as I know is basically the only software, it was unsupported by that at the time.
And do you know if even today that software supports this particular vehicle?
I don't believe it is.
Conrad grabs two evidence bags and hands them to the witness.
Okay. I'm going to show you what's been marked for ID only. Items 447 and 448. Let's see if you recognize those items. So.
Yes, I do. It's the infotainment module and the OnStar module.
Okay. And those are those the items that you removed from that 2021 Suburban?
Yes, they are.
Okay. I'm going to ask you, let's start with the entertainment center. I believe there is a serial number printed on that. Could you read that serial number on the infotainment center to into the record, please?
432-031-217-000-296.
Okay. And your Exhibit 444, which is your paperwork you filled out and removed it, did you write that serial number on that paperwork?
Yes, I did.
And you don't have to read it out loud again, but can you compare the serial number for the infotainment center on your property sheet with the serial number on that box and tell me if they have?
They do.
And then what's the other item, 447, what is that?
The LG OnStar module.
Okay, and does that have a serial number somewhere on it?
It does, but I cannot read it in the bag.
Would you be able to do anything to help you read it? Is that, if we open it up, would it make it
easier? Yeah, if I could remove it.
All right, do you have a knife on you? That you
I do.
Mr. Hudak takes a moment to open the evidence bag before retrieving the item inside.
It looks like you're doing something else there.
It appears to be a Federal Bureau of Investigation evidence tape. That's actually right over the serial number, and the letters in federal are preventing me from reading it. So,
is it able?
I don't.
It's not possible.
It does not appear that's coming up.
All right. But on your property receipt, could you read the serial number on your property receipt for the OnStar?
Yes. It is 009 Victor India Echo Yankee 519052.
All right. And to the best of your knowledge, the unit you're holding, that exact unit you took out of that vehicle?
Yes. And for the letters and numbers of the serial number, I can see what I can see does match up.
All right. At this time, say we move to exhibit the property receipt 444.
Conrad hands Hudak another piece of paper.
All right, and I'm going to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 445, and let me see if you just recognize that document.
Yes, I do.
And is that a document that you personally prepared?
No, it's not.
All right, but is that another property receipt?
Yes, it is.
And are those records that SLED, property receipts, are those records SLED keeps in the normal course of business?
Yes.
Okay. And do you recognize the name and signature of who did prepare that receipt?
Yes.
Who is that?
Lieutenant Britt Duff.
Okay, and what does that property receipt represent?
It appears to be representing that GM infotainment module and the LG OnStar module, changing custody for the purpose of providing to the FBI for examination.
And do you know how those two things were sent to the FBI?
I do not.
All right. And the serial number, the GM infotainment serial number, I don't have to read it again, but could you compare that to the serial number on the infotainment center?
They match.
Okay. And then I know you can read the full serial number on the OnStar, but the letters that you can see, can you compare those with the serial number on the second property receipt?
For the ones I can see, they do match.
And at this time, I'm going to move to introduce Exhibit 445 into evidence.
Objection. Submitted without objection.
All right. And at this time, I'm just going to move that items 447 and 448. Be marked for ID only at this point.
You don't have to move for them to be marked for ID only.
Yes, sir. We're just going to mark them for ID only at this point. Nothing further for this witness hearing.
Anything by the defense?
No questions, Joe.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
With the defense declining the opportunity to cross-examine the witness, Brian Hudak steps down from the witness stand. The state next calls Dwight Falkowski. Falkowski appears to be in his 40s. He wears a black suit, an aqua blue dress shirt, and a green and yellow patterned tie. John Conrad again handles the questioning for the prosecution. He begins by asking the witness about his professional responsibilities.
All right. Mr. Falkowski, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing good.
All right. Where are you employed, sir?
I am employed with the FBI.
Okay. And what is your job title there?
I'm an electronics engineer.
Okay. And what unit of the FBI are you employed in?
The Electronic Device Analysis Unit.
Okay. And what does the Electronic Device Analysis Unit do at the FBI?
We collect data off of cell phones and other mobile devices, and in my case, vehicle systems, mobile devices in general, that can't be collected by commercial tools.
And so the FBI has a unit dedicated to extracting data off certain devices that is otherwise unavailable, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And you kind of mentioned it, but specifically, what is your role in this unit?
I serve a role as an automotive forensic specialist.
Okay. And what does that entail? What does that mean?
So I take a look at automotive systems and extract data off the memory components of those systems. And then from the images we get from those memory components, I will take a look at there, find the data that we're interested in finding, and we will create parsing tools that will pull out that data and take it from a computer format to a human readable format.
Let's explain that a little more. You said a parsing tool. What is that? Well, explain that to the jury what that is, please.
Okay, so a parsing tool is, in this case, a computer script that I'm writing that, or I have written, that will go in and look at the collected binary image, the flash memory image that I've created, and go in and either create a file system or just go with raw into the binary and search for data that is of interest to us. This is data we've researched and found, and it'll take that data out of the system and again put it into a human readable format, text or graphics or coordinate points, so that we can understand it as humans.
And in its most basic format, data is stored how?
In binary.
And what does binary mean?
Binary is just zeros and ones, what a computer reads.
Okay. And a parsing tool, if I understood you correctly, it helps you take that binary information and translate it into information that you can read and understand. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. First of all, tell us a little bit about your background. What education and training have you had in this area?
I have a bachelor's of science degree in electrical engineering. Okay. And if you'll give me one moment, I have my CV here, and I'll list out training I've taken with the FBI.
Mr. Falkowski retrieves the document and refers to it as he describes the multiple levels of training that he has accumulated over the course of his career. After the witness finishes this description, John Conrad continues his direct examination.
Okay, and what do you recall, if not specifically, but generally, what were you qualified as an expert witness when in 2019?
I don't recall the exact name they gave me for the expert witness, but I serve as, what I've told them, I serve as an electronics engineer, automotive forensics specialist.
Okay. And how would you best describe your expertise that you're going to talk about today? How would you personally describe it?
I take a look at automotive systems, mm-hmm. and I go in there and find the data of interest. Mm-hmm. So we'll go into the types of data would be things like connected devices, cell phones, thumb drives, cell phones that can also collect things like call records and contact lists, also navigation data, locations of the vehicle mm-hmm. or destinations that the user may have entered in the system. I go find that data in these systems, and I write these parsing tools that I've mentioned yep. to go ahead and pull those out. That's generally the extent.
So would automotive forensic specialist be descriptive of what you do?
Yes.
Okay. Your Honor, at this time, the state would move enter Mr. Falkowski as an expert in the area of automotive forensic specialist.
Judge Clifton Newman qualifies Mr. Falkowski as an expert witness. Prosecutor Conrad continues his direct examination by asking the witness about his methods.
All right. So let's talk a little more about the mechanics of how you obtain this data and what you do. And just talking, not specifically in this case, but just kind of generally in your unit.
Okay.
What do you do? When you receive a device from a vehicle, first of all, what kind of devices do you receive from vehicles?
They tend to be an infotainment center, which can be basically the brains of the system that puts on some of these modern cars. It puts up the screen. It shows your music. If it's got navigation, it'll show notification. It's the computer brain of that system.
Okay.
Also, take a look at components such as the telematics box, mm-hmm. which you'll hear about, like the OnStar module in this case. And those will tend to have connected device services and sometimes location data as well.
Okay. And just generally speaking, how do you access the information stored on these devices?
First thing we do is what we call data extraction, and data extraction involves basically going in and finding the flash memory components on this computer, the infotainment system or the telematics box, and we have different methods to extract that data. We have software methods, we have methods where we'll connect to the circuit board, or when sometimes we will just remove the chip and read it with a reader.
And let me stop you real quick. This jury has heard testimony about cell phone extractions and how cell phones are extracted. And you mentioned sometimes you can use a software method. How is that analogous to how cell phone data is normally obtained in extraction?
If I can compare it to a commercial tool like Cellebrite, a software solution would be something you could plug into the system while it's operating in order to get into the system and extract the data you need.
But some of these automotive devices are far more unique than an average cell phone, correct?
Yes.
Therefore, is there an off-the-shelf ready system that can access most vehicles?
No. There is one commercial company called Berla that does have a tool that is used in the field. However, we only accept the devices at EDAU for systems that there is no support for.
Okay. So you mentioned this company, Berla, which does produce a commercially available software that can extract data from some vehicles, correct?
Some vehicles, yes.
But it does not support the 2021 Chevrolet Suburban, correct?
That's correct.
All right. And that's how the device ended up with you, correct?
That's correct.
All right. So I kind of stopped you there. And if a software solution isn't available, like Berla, what are some of the other methods that you use to pull data off of some of these automotive systems?
I mentioned such as attaching wires to a circuit board and extracting data from the memory component, or also removing the chip from the board and putting it in a reader and reading the chip, the flash memory chip directly.
And let's talk more about what you did in this case. When you attempted to access the data for the 2021 Suburban, did you encounter any problems?
Yes. We ran into our first instance of data being encrypted on a vehicle.
Okay. And that's not something you'd run into before?
Not on vehicles.
Okay. And briefly, explain to the jury what you mean by encrypted, please.
So when a system encrypts the data, it takes basically a code word such as it's called a key and scrambles the data using that key so that it can't be written unless you have that key. And the key to read it back, you require the key to unlock the data and see it back in its regular form.
And you discovered this data on a Chevy Suburban was encrypted, correct?
That's correct.
John Conrad next hands Mr. Falkowski two small evidence bags.
All right. I'm going to show you, they've been marked for ID only, 448 and 447. And I'm going to take a look at them and see if you recognize these items, please.
This is the OnStar module that I processed, and this is the infotainment system that I processed for the Suburban.
How do you know those are the units you processed?
We have an FBI identifier tag on here, and my personal identifier symbols are on here.
And that's on both of those devices?
On both units.
All right. So let's talk about, you say when you initially tried to access the data on these, they were encrypted. Can you tell us what the FBI did or what you did to ultimately allow you to be able to access the information?
Involved our greater team to develop a tool that would be able to reach into a live system on one of these vehicles and extract the encryption keys and remove get the encryption keys so we could decrypt the data that we had collected.
Okay. And was that process ultimately successful?
Yes, it was.
And how long did that take?
Approximately 1 year.
All right. And when you accessed this information and you finally had it decrypted, what types of information did you find? Let's start on the infotainment center. What types of information did you find on there?
So the infotainment center contained connected devices, phones that have been linked by Bluetooth or USB, associated with some of those devices were call logs and contact lists, and there was also a little bit of location data.
So you found some call logs, correct?
That's correct.
And how would that infotainment center get call logs? Explain that process. Why would they be on that center?
So a lot of cars that have Bluetooth connectivity will, when you connect the Bluetooth with them, sometimes they will ask you if you want to let the car connect to it or access your data on your phone. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't ask, but in most cases it will ask you, and then at that point it'll take things like call logs and pull them from the phone into the computer, the infotainment system.
All right, and you found some call logs on this infotainment center, right?
Correct. Yes.
You found some location data, correct?
That's correct.
Do you recall if you found any from the date of June 7th of 2021?
Yes, there was data from that date.
Location data?
Oh, location data, no. Okay. There's call data.
All right, you found some call data. You found some Bluetooth data. And what kind of Bluetooth data did you find for devices did you find?
Primarily the Bluetooth address of the connecting device.
Did it provide you any information of when a device may have been connected to the infotainment center?
No, there was no timestamps with that data.
Okay. All right.
And with that, we bring to a close this episode of Jury Duty, The Trial of Alex Murdaugh. Please join us on our next installment as we continue our review of the testimony of FBI electronics engineer Dwight Falkowski. Also, check out the crime story podcast Night Raid wherever you get your podcasts. And if you would like to listen to these episodes early and ad-free, head over to our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You can find more information about this trial on our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page or at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created and produced by yours truly, Carrie Antholis. It was co-produced, written, and edited by Chris Terracone. Music for this episode was provided by Strike Audio. Trial audio is courtesy of Law & Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty.